Welcome to Gardening Naturally with Jeff Ferris. Call or text Jeff now with your gardening and landscape questions, 512-836-0590.
Hey, good morning, gardeners. Excuse me. Welcome to, or welcome back to Gardening Naturally. So far, it's been a nice day out. So far. We still have possibility for some rain. It increases as we get closer to the afternoon. Hopefully not serious rain, meaning flash flooding, but it's still rain. And after some of the rain we got last night, it may not take much to cause flash flooding. So keep your eyes open if you're out there. If it starts to rain, you know the rules. Do not drive through water. Turn around. Don't drown. We're one of the worst places in the country for this. At the moment, skies are clear. Don't know if they'll stay that way all day. But we're going to start warming up some. For at least the next 4 or 5 days, we're going to have warm temps. Warmer than normal temperatures. But we're going to fall back down to normal again by the weekend. That's kind of how it happens around here. One day it's hot, one day it's not so hot. So be ready for it. Let's go to the phone. This is Todd. Todd, what can I help you with?
Morning, Jeff. I've got some, I just went out and checked my potato plants, and I've got this strange black beetle on the plant, and I don't know if it's a good beetle or a bad beetle.
Bad beetle.
Bad beetle, okay.
They're, for the most part, beetles are beneficial. They eat bugs, they tear up the soil, things like that. But the ones on your potatoes, the black ones could be Colorado potato beetles.
Okay.
And they're attacking the plant. I don't know if they actually managed to attack the tubers. You can try using diatomaceous earth or a spinosad-based spray.
Okay.
Spinosad does a good job on beetles. It's safe. They're both organic. They both are. You could treat the plant today because the tubers are in the ground. They're not getting any of this on them. But that is one way to try to get control of those beetles.
Okay. That sounds good. Thanks, Jeff.
Good. You bet. Good luck. Yeah, folks. There are some classes. By classes, I mean biological classifications. Beetles, not all, but generally, fall into a class called Coleoptera. Caterpillars fall into a class called Lepidoptera. The good thing is, Lepidoptera can be controlled with BT. Most of them. Coleoptera, the beetles, the beetles can be controlled with spinosad. Both are organic. Both last 5 to 7 days on the plant. So they're an effective tool for taking care of beetles. Don't assume all beetles are bad. For the most part, beetles are beneficial. Don't assume, oh, beetle must be bad, got to kill it. The other control, one of the best controls for beetles, is spiders. Yeah, spiders are really good at doing in beetles. If you get cucumber beetles, it's pale green to yellow with green spots on it. It's like a ladybug, but green, kind of a Riddler kind of bug. Spiders love them. Spiders will take care of that problem for you. Oh, excuse me. Sneezing attack there. If you are reducing the amount of pesticides you're using, that means you're killing fewer and fewer of the good bugs. That means the bad guys are being taken care of. That means you don't have to spray stuff. That keeps your garden, that keeps the biologies, that keeps the beneficials intact, happy and healthy, and they're taking care of your yard for you. You don't have to worry about them. But there are some issues with this. An example, I have roadrunners in my neighborhood. And yesterday, 2 days ago, 2 days ago, we looked up on the roof and I had a roadrunner on the roof. It's like, what are you doing up there? And he had a lizard in his mouth. Well, those lizards are really beneficial. They eat a lot of bugs. But then again, roadrunners eat the lizards that eat bad bugs. But roadrunners also eat snakes. And that includes some bad snakes. So it's kind of like this balancing act in nature is everything is balanced on the head of a pin. Sometimes it's obvious. Sometimes it's easy. Sometimes it's tough choices. Folks, this is Gardening Naturally. Gotta take a break. I'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Going to be a nice day, this morning at least. Be able to get out and get some things taken care of. Some of you may have to go out and look and see what damage you suffered. I got an inch and a quarter overnight. That's a fair amount of rain in a single day. I had an inch, probably an inch and a quarter coming into Saturday morning. So I have had in the last week 2 inches plus rain. That's great. Man, my grass is super green. My grass is just screaming at me to get out there and mow it. But it looks really good. My trees are looking better than they have maybe ever. Big, dark, deep green leaves. Good growth on the tree. So far, this has been kind of an awesome spring. Tomatoes, nothing to pick yet, but lots of bracts with tomatoes filling out on them. Planted a variety called Celebrity 2. It's a type of celebrity tomato because haven't had a lot of help when I've been growing slicers. Smaller tomatoes like Juliet's and the Sun Goals. not a problem. Slicers, I just never could get them going. And I've got a bunch of good-sized slicers coming now. Can't wait till they plump up a little more and turn red. I may have to fire up the grill just to have a burger to put that slice of tomato on. Let's go to the phone. This is Annette. Annette, what can I help you with?
Hi, Jeff. I was wondering, when is it too late to lay compost down on your beds and your turf?
Okay. You could do it now. You want to probably get it done before the temperatures stay at 85 degrees or above. That way you don't worry about burning the turf. Mm-hmm. And in your garden, because you water it more frequently than you would your turf in most cases, mm-hmm. you can put compost in up until a little warmer temperature even. But somewhere around 85 degrees, if you mm-hmm. were to spread the compost on your turf, there's a chance that it will start decomposing any dead grass, and that will generate heat. And you could burn your turf that way.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's above 85 or there's rain in the forecast to water it in well, that'll be fine.
Okay. All righty. I don't know if I'm going to be able to lay the compost down like in the next week or, well, before the temps stay above 85. Would using Medina Soil Activator or Medina Has to Grow, would those be good ways to add, you know, good microbials and things like that to the beds and the turf?
Yes. Soil okay. Activator, good choice. Okay. Has to Grow, that is more of a fertilizer, not okay. going to work as much feeding the biology, but the Soil Activator will, and mm-hmm. you can do it when it's over 85. Maybe if you're enthusiastic, you could do it once a month.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
You bet. I enjoy. It'll be looking good here before long.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call, Annette. Yeah, folks. Medina Soil Activator is blended in such a way to promote biological growth. It has carbohydrates in it, which feed the soil biology. And that is what we're looking for. Lots of soil biology. The more little critters, from fungi and bacteria all the way up to creepy crawlies, they break the soil up. They make all these pits and pockets in the soil that hold water. It's ironic because at the same time, they help the soil drain, but it prevents it from drying out. It doesn't go totally dry. So Soil Activator, Medina Soil Activator, is a good choice to be able to easily and quickly provide nutrient to all that soil biology you got. The more nutrient it gets, the happier and healthier they will be, and they will improve the soil for you. It is not something you have to do every day, not even once a week. Once a month is probably borderline excessive. So using it simply requires a hose end sprayer While you're spraying it, the other hand's free to hold your favorite beverage. There's no easier way to improve your lawn. Let's go to the phone. This is Shirley.
Yes, good morning.
What can I help you with?
I have a question about a houseplant called a peach lily. How do you dispose of the flower that buds out, the white, when it dies back? Do you just clip it off close to the top or what?
Close to the bottom of the stem.
Bottom of the stem?
Yep. Good clean cut. Throw it away.
All right. Thank you much.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks for the call.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. Let's go to the phone. This is Mario. Mario, what can I help you with?
Yeah, Jeff, I just heard you talking about the Medina soil activator, and my follow-up question is, the Medina molasses, is it okay to spray if the temperatures are above 85?
Yes. Now, Medina soil activator has molasses in it. So you could eliminate a step, or you could use soil activator the first week of the month and molasses the third week of the month and alternate back and forth like that. That will really build up your soil also.
Okay. Thank you. You answered my question.
You bet. Thanks for the call, Mario. One more here. This is Richard. Richard, what can I help you with?
Yes, my cucumber vines, they grow like crazy. I've got them on a fence. They're 7 or 8 foot tall every year. They bloom heavy, very few cucumbers. And I'm afraid it's because I might have bared too many leaves during last fall.
What are you fertilizing with?
I haven't.
Okay. You can try a fertilizer, and you want something where the middle number?
Phosphorus.
Yep, you want more of that than you do nitrogen.
Okay.
That can help encourage fruiting, well, blooming and fruiting, and it increases root growth. So
yes.
Those things will help you wind up with more cucumbers.
Okay. Thank you.
You bet. Give that a try, Richard, and see if you don't get a better crop out of it. Yeah, folks, generically speaking, very generic here, nitrogen makes leaves. It does a whole bunch of other stuff, too. I know. But generally speaking, for about 85% of the plants, nitrogen promotes growth, new leaves, new stems. Phosphorus, again, 85% of the plants, phosphorus promotes root growth, blooming, and fruiting. So you want more fruits? You want to be fertilizing with a higher phosphorus rather than a higher nitrogen. When we start tomatoes, we tend to feed them nitrogen to get them big. Once they start blooming, we may switch over to a higher phosphorus fertilizer to make them bloom and fruit. Very, very generic, folks. It doesn't apply in every single situation, but it does for most of them. Brio, I see you there. I got to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. I'll catch you on the other side.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phones here. This is Brio. Brio, what can I help you with?
One specific one. So I remember when I bought the
Oops, that sounded like a cutoff there. Call me back, Rio, if you still got a question there. Someone sent me a text with a picture of what looks like a millipede or centipede. I get them mixed up. They are beneficial. They can, I don't know, you want to call it sting or bite. So you want to be careful handling them. But they are beneficial. Most of those type of critters are decomposers. Their job is to take big chunks and turn them into little chunks. And they do a good job of it. They are not harmful unless, of course, you provoke them and son of a gun, they sting you. So, you know, when you see them, you'll have to freak out. But, you know, don't poke the bear, right? And you won't get attacked by them. Now, there is a really amazing, I think it's a centipede in Texas that can get to over a foot long. And they're bluish colored with orange pincers on it. They can pack a wallop if they were to get a hold of you. But the size of them is usually enough that if I were to see one, I give them plenty of space. They're relatively rare, but they do exist here in Texas. Very interesting. Kind of creepy. There's I'm calling them something wrong here, reptile places here in Austin area. And you may be able to go see one of these giant centipedes. Sometimes they'll have them on display. But it's like a foot long. It's probably an inch wide. That's a big bug, right? So I give them plenty of clearance to make sure that I am not bothering them. In the meantime, remember, of all the insects that we have that are in the garden, 90% of them are either neutral, meaning they don't harm, they don't benefit, they're just bugs, or beneficial, meaning they help get rid of guys you don't want in your garden. So if you see something, before you go, oh, got a spray, make sure you know what it is. If you can get a picture of it, you can hit Google up for, hey, what's this bug I'm seeing here? They're not 100% accurate in defining what it is, but they can give you a good head start. Just blanket poisoning everything? No, that's not what we need to do. Doing that for so long has actually caused us some problems. We don't have a rich environment anymore where the beneficial insects can thrive. When we don't have a thriving beneficial colony, that means the pests, the bugs we don't want, can run out of control. just because you have bug X, Y, or Z, okay, that doesn't mean you're in a terrible situation. It doesn't mean that, oh gosh, I got to get rid of it. It's going to kill my X, Y, or Z. We should always find out first and foremost what it is that is attacking us. Look, when you go to the doctor and you say, I have an upset stomach, they don't throw you on the operating table and cut you open and look for the problem. They go through some, let's go, did we check this? Did we check this? Did we check this? Come to find out, it could have just been something you ate and not some terrible thing where, you know, now you got Ebola. We should do the same with the bugs that are in the garden. Now, as I said earlier, we are probably going to be seeing a whole bunch of fire ant mounds. This rain flushes them up. They do that because they're flooding where their nest is, and they're trying to rebuild and make it so that the water isn't going to drown them. As you see these mounds, do not disturb them. Don't go, well, I'm going to put something on them to kill the fire ants. So let me stir this mound up first to make sure I got them all awake. Do not do that. What can happen is you will get the mound to think it's being attacked. And its defensive measure can be to go, well, let's split into four pieces. Everybody separate. We'll go create new mounds. That kind of defeats the purpose, doesn't it? If you find the mound, look closely, carefully, to make sure that you can see that it's active, that there are ants there, and apply a bait that they'll come and get. You do not want to stir up that mound thinking that you're going to get them to eat more of the bait or die faster. That will not be the issue. They will just decide to go make safe haven somewhere else. And, you know, the neighbor and I were talking, and he was telling us how this week he had a big old nest of bees show up in one of his trees. Guess what? He didn't spray them. There are too many beekeepers in the area, and he knew one. Had this big hive. They're migrating now. It wouldn't be unusual to look up in your tree and go, wow, look at that big old nest of bees there, and panic. Don't panic. He called a beekeeper, and the beekeeper came, and they have a specially designed vacuum system. Yeah, that's kind of cool, isn't it? And they sucked up the bees, and they deposited them in a hive to produce honey and gave them a home. No more bees in his trees, no risk or worry about the bees. And the bees weren't killed. The bees were migrated to a new hive, brand new comb, and away they went. So don't worry about even the bees. They are not an issue. Now, don't go and bother them. I've got a big stand of Gallardia, Indian blanket. And there are bees on almost every single flower. I mean, you can hear them. You start walking closer and you're going, what's that sound? That's the bees buzzing. They don't bother me. They're not chasing me. Let them have their time. They're pollinating flowers and they're making honey. That's about the best you can hope for. Let's go to the phone. This is Todd. Todd, what can I help you with?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I have an area in my backyard that I need to add some soil amendment to the grass. People recommend Dillo dirt, but I have a dog that would roll around in Dillo dirt. So what would you recommend as far as adding something that is dog friendly? Ish.
Okay. Rather than Dillo dirt, which there's a whole argument over Dillo dirt, but it can do a good job on your lawn. You have the perfect reason not to use it because you don't want your dog to stink. However, you can get the same bulk quantity of compost from many of the soil yards around here. Well ground, nice and thin, and you could spread that a quarter to half an inch thick. Your dog probably will not roll around in it. Even if they did, it's not going to leave a nasty scent.
Gotcha. Okay, well, I'll check them out. Yeah. We just can't have, Dillo dirt in the house. So that was just, the primary part.
Yeah, that was the rule. Got it. Listen, you're in Round Rock. Whittlesley carries some. Also, if you go a little further north, Austin Landscape Supply. So there's two sources for you.
Thanks, sir. Y'all have a great day.
You too. Thanks for the call. Folks, I got to take a quick break here. I'll be right back.
This is Gardening Naturally on News Radio KLBJ with host Jeff Ferris. Jeff is ready for your calls or text messages at 512-836-0590.
Welcome back, everybody. It has been an interesting couple of days when it comes to the rain. And now we're going to suffer the heat and humidity from all that rain as the temperatures get hotter. So be prepared for that. Was outside yesterday and it rained. So I went in the house or I went in a covered area. And when it was done raining, I got out to do some work. And oh my gosh, I thought I was swimming. It was so humid. So be prepared for some muggy weather. Let's go to the phone. This is George. George, what can I help you with?
Hey, how are you doing this morning? I've listened for years to this little show, and I love it.
Well, thank you.
Okay. There's some misnomers out there. Let me let you know my background. I ran the largest composting facility in the Central Texas area for about 20 years until we sold it. There are two types of compost. There's food compost and there are sewage compost along with food grease, which is in the sewage category. I am licensed still by the TCEQ to operate a facility that is a GR5, which is grease and sewage. The other types of facilities, you do not need a license that deal with organic, like Organics by Gosh, which is now E3. Whittlesey will buy food compost. They do not sell sewage like Hornsby Bend, which is marketed and patented name as Dillo dirt.
Right.
If your compost stinks, it is not fully cooked. So it will carry pathogens. If your compost is a year or two old, and that's how it should be before it's sold, it continues to cook down and cook down and cook down. Keep it in the big piles, it'll get hot. And it gets really hot to the point where it can ignite itself. But if it does not smell like a whole earthy, just rich soil smelling compost, you do not want to put it down. You can get botulism from food waste. That bacteria will live if your compost stinks. If it doesn't stink and it's earthy and richy, that's the stuff you want. You really need to be careful applying it if you have pets or kids. There was a huge problem one year down at Auditorium Shores with Dillo dirt. We all know about it. It was undercooked. Yep. People got staph infection. They finally came out and admitted it was undercooked. But sewage compost and food waste have to pass what they call an STA. You take a test of it, you send it to a laboratory, they send it back, and they tell you if it is cured. So the amount of waste expelled, the methanes by the bugs that eat it, if it's really high and it smells like ammonia, it is way undercooked. There should be none of that whatsoever at all. If it were, well, it is my yard. I still get compost about every 2 years and put it down, but I only use the sewage compost because I know it's more than 2 years old and is fully sterile. That's the big push. You got to have sterile compost, or you can bring in stuff to your yard that you just don't want there.
Do you remember?
That's all.
Do you remember? Gosh, how many years ago was this? Helotes, when the composting facility down there burst into flame because it was so hot?
Oh, yeah. They had a big fire at Hornsby Bend on a Christmas Eve that lasted for a week and a half.
I was with TCEQ at the time, and we had staff at Helotes for more than 6 months.
You couldn't put the fire out at Helotes because of the Edwards Aquifer recharge zone that's underneath it. That was the reason they couldn't use water on it, because they would have washed all of the ash and residuals from the wood. It was a grinding and composting facility. They would have, because they also had womanized wood in there, which you're not supposed to use in the making of compost. And the TCEQ does a really good job of trying to help the composters with the rules. And there's a bunch of them. Our permit was like 56, those big school binders, three-inch ring binders. We had so many rules that, you know, it was easy. Composting is easy.
Yep.
If you just follow the rules. And you get really good training at, you know, the facilities that train your operators and or your licensed people themselves to actually run it. And there's not a lot of people that want to work in the industry because, you know, of what it is.
Yeah. It is. Well, George, thank you very much for the information and the distinction of the types of compost that we're looking for. And man, there's nothing better for improving the lawn, but you want to make sure you're getting what's actually good compost.
Yeah, it has to be top notch. You know, you can't, if it's got a smell, just don't even consider it, because you'll be bringing in stuff. The bugs, not only the microbacteria, but there'll be other bugs in the compost. Because you'll have funguses and things like that that have not fully been sterilized. And that's the whole purpose of the heat in compost, is to sterilize the material and turn it into a safe product.
Yep. Well, George,
I didn't know you worked for the TCEQ. That's pretty cool. So you're well versed in it. That's good.
It's been a while. But yeah, that I worked when we had the issue at Helotes. That was we always found that funny, that the compost pile burst into flame. So
yeah,
anyway,
I ran the other one on the other side of town for a while, Elmendorf, when it was sold to the company. So I ran the one in San Antonio on the east side, Elmendorf, and then actually the name of the company I ran was JV Dirt and Loam. Daisy Works out off of 969 and 973. As an 88-acre composting facility for sewage and grease trap waste.
Wow. Well, Thank you for that. Now we all know better and got a clear explanation of this about the quality and the importance of when you all get compost. It should smell like dirt, folks. It should not smell like ammonia. It should have this earthy, walking in the woods type scent to it. If it doesn't, you got to start asking questions right away. It probably wasn't completely composted. And that can make a bad situation when it comes to your garden. George mentioned the battle at having it down at Zilker Park grounds and people getting sick. That was a disaster. That was a complete disaster. However, it's a beautiful day so far. It's going to be a great weekend. We got some rain, maybe some more coming. Go out there today and think good thoughts. Enjoy your garden. Enjoy the day out. And I will talk to you all again next Saturday at 9 a.m.